Now, back to Lansing's only live afternoon talk show, Ebling and You, on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here with Scott Eckersley, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Scott, George Perla's first recruiting class in 1983 included one of the smartest players ever to come to Michigan State. His name's Dean Altobelli from the Upper Peninsula. And he was an academic All-American. He also had a couple of wins over Notre Dame and one over Michigan, and became a prominent attorney. Studied overseas, and people thought, well, he's grown out of football. Guess what? He's at University of Alabama now working for Nick Saban. He decided to give up law school and everything else he had accomplished, and just couldn't resist the chance to get back in the game, and now he's in quality control with the Crimson Tide. I want to welcome in our next guest, Joe Rexrode, beat writer for the Lansing State Journal. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Jack. You know, that's really interesting. I guess that means he's not going to be at the Duffy meetings this fall, then. I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't know it either until Friday night, and someone said, wow. Hey, did you hear about Dino moving to Alabama to work with Saban? I said, what? I thought maybe he meant Dino Foligno. I know he didn't mean Mark D'Antonio, who was also nicknamed Dino. But right. I said, Dean Altobelli, are you sure? And if I checked it out with someone, finally I said, well, it's 10:30. I was coming home from a high school game. I'm just going to call the guy. So I called him, and sure enough, and Saban's got him looking at defensive tape. So,
wow.
The way it goes.
Well, good for him.
He's kind of got Michigan State South down there in Tuscaloosa anyway.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, but I wanted to talk to you about Saturday. First of all, the game itself, and then we'll get to the aftermath. Can you recall a more dramatic call than the one Mark D'Antonio summoned up with Little Giants?
I can't, and I've been trying to think of similar situations. I really can't at all. I mean, you're the first guy I always go to when something big happens. I always go to you and say, all right, Jack, search your brain. I mean, you've seen a lot more football than I have, and I think what you said that right afterward was, in terms of a game-changing play, the thing that came to mind was Levi Jackson's run against Ohio State in 1974 when Michigan State beat number one Ohio State. But like you said, it wasn't, the last play of the game, and it wasn't a call. It was a play. As far as a call, I mean, I think this one is at Michigan State, to me, from what I know, stands alone or at least really high on the list.
The only one I could come up with over the weekend, Joe, was the first play of a game and not the last play. And it was when Duffy Doherty's unranked Spartans in 68 played number 4 Notre Dame and opened the game with an onside kick.
Okay, yeah.
And recovered, went down and scored, and that set the tone for a 21-17 upset. The amazing part of that was when they lined up again, Duffy wanted to do it again, and Perlis nearly fell out of the press box, and finally Henry Bullitt talked him out of it. So he was going to do it twice in a row to start the game. And he told the media the night before exactly what he was going to do, and they all thought it was hilarious. Nobody believed him. So as far as a last play and the drama of that, the only one I could compare it to was TJ Duckett catching the pass from Smoker against Michigan in 2001.
Right, that's another wild celebration in the same end zone kind of thing, last play. I mean, of course, last year, Larry Caper had the overtime run on the last play, and that was quite a, not just a winning play, but it was a big reversal of emotion because it seemed like everything was in Michigan's favor going into the overtime and then the pick and the run. But, yeah, just the shock factor here. actually, I was thinking of the Caper play, and I remember last year, the full press box Michigan game. It was a great play, but you kind of gauge things by the reaction of the press box. Usually it's, people are staying pretty reserved and composed no matter what's going on. The other night, I think you were actually on the field.
I was on the field,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen a press box react that way. It was people, because a lot of beat writers, we had to be up there trying to scramble and make sense of the whole end of the game. I mean, it was people sitting up and saying, what in the heck is going on? It was a major, major shock factor. And, the fact that, Aaron Bates, you know, went to a second option. I mean, you know, that's pretty amazing in itself that he's able to just stand back there calmly in the pocket and find a second receiver, you know.
Well, Michigan State's had a lot of scholarship quarterbacks who couldn't find a secondary receiver. The fact that he could, I guess that's why he's Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be now the biggest rock star of a punter in Michigan State history, right? I mean, he's the only captain, and now he just completed one of the most memorable plays.
You know, before that play, you could say he was having an incredible year. He gets every hold exactly where it has to be. Ask Dan Conroy about Aaron Bates sometime. And, the punting the other night, he's over 45 yards again, close to 46, and got a couple 60-yarders. And the only reason his punting average wasn't higher was a couple times he was trying to kill the ball inside the 20, which he did. And I thought his kick at the end of regulation that was a net 61-yard change when all Notre Dame needed was a field goal. He punted from his own 12. He was standing in the end zone when he caught the snap. Was one of the best punts in Michigan State history.
No, I was just gonna say that was one of the most clutch plays of the game before they ever got the Little Giants, and that was a huge punt. And Notre Dame still would have had good field position off that punt, of course, without the penalty. But the fact that he was able to at that moment boom the ball like that, I mean, that takes some resolve and some guts. So, I agree. I think he's having a great year, and he's an undervalued weapon, I think, for a lot of people.
His roommate, Kirk Cousins, has struggled, and he is ninth in passing yardage and ninth in passing efficiency in the Big Ten, and just made some incredibly poor decisions. I think that Michigan State has already been sacked half as many times as they were all last year, and a couple of balls that have been intercepted. Do you see anything different? Do you know what's going on with Cousins?
No, it's a good question. The interesting thing the other night is he's 12 for 12 in the second half. Now a lot of those were screen passes, but, he made three, decisions you can't make. Well, really two that were you just can't make them. They're like young player decisions, the pick in the first half and then, late in the game. I mean, that could have been absolutely fatal to Michigan State. The fact that he didn't just tuck it and run and force Brian Kelly to take that timeout. He goes back and gets the penalty. So he looks to me like he's trying to be too perfect sometimes, which I think is a thing with him.
Well, and I thought his third down sack just before the Little Giants play was very poor.
Yeah, right. That would have been the third one, exactly. Now, I watched that play again a few times, though, and I tell you what, I mean, that line just got absolutely collapsed really quickly. But you still have to get rid of it.
Get rid of the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder, and for one thing, I do think that Blair White absence is a factor, although I think B.J. Cunningham is fast becoming that guy he's always going to look for on third down.
Yeah.
But I also wonder, Kirk Cousins, for the first time in a long time, is dealing with nothing but high expectations and no one doubting him, no one trying to get the job from him, no one thinking he's the third-string guy and these other guys are better. I mean, now people are saying, well, Kirk Cousins could be one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten. There is a little bit of a different emotional approach maybe when you go from having to prove everyone wrong to all of a sudden prove everyone right. I don't know if that you can really trace that to performance on the field so much, but I think maybe he is putting a little bit too much pressure on himself.
I guess if we're talking about expectations, a guy who had pretty low expectations for in many senses, Joe, that
right.
is Chris L. Rucker, a cornerback who much maligned, and couldn't have picked a better time to have his best game than against Notre Dame after what happened a year ago. Here he has a game high and career high 12 tackles, a tackle for loss, a couple pass breakups, and really had a play that is going to get overlooked when he bent Kyle Rudolph backwards, and that is not easy to do on that third down play that set up the field goal.
Huge play. One of the top three plays of the game for Michigan State. Top three of our plays. You're right. Kyle Rudolph is a load, and it's third and three. They, hold him, and, Brian Kelly goes for the field goal. That was a huge play. You're right. It's funny because, Dane Christos for 369 and four touchdowns, and Notre Dame moved up and down the field, especially in that second half. But I thought both Michigan State cornerbacks had really great games. Johnny Adams got beat a couple times very visibly, too. But, right. You know, you're talking about 55 pass attempts. For the most part, I thought he was outstanding. I mean, he stayed with Michael Floyd on that play action.
Yeah.
Deep route. He had the pick. And then, like you said, Rucker was all over the place. I mean, it's so strange. I mean, their pass defense struggled so mightily. But I really think they are strong at cornerback. And I think they need to get better at safety.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and Rucker had that forced fumble, too. So, you know, sometimes if a team's going to throw the ball 55 times, they're going to gain a few yards. And you just have to kind of accept that. If you can get three takeaways, that minimizes that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you, Joe, about the situation now with Mark D'Antonio. And when we saw him in the press trailer, hey, he's joking about movies, and it looked like it was his night of nights. It's amazing how fast that can turn.
Yeah, it really is. Excuse me. I mean, what an incredible, you know, few hours for Mark D'Antonio and Michigan State. I mean, to me, that's the coaching call of his career. I think that's a, you know, you don't want to overstate it, but that's, you know, potentially career-changing type moment for him, you know, or even just the way the fan base views him. I mean, just what a huge win and a huge move in that situation. And like you said, on top of the world, and they're 3-0 and about to be in the rankings, and, you know, all of a sudden he's in the hospital, and obviously brings a lot of perspective. And, you know, I think it's, well, for one thing, it's a good thing that, you know, they got him there quickly, it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like he's going to be okay. And this is one of those things that, from what I understand, you know, it could be worse later if they didn't get it now. I mean, that's, you know, the fact that they put the stent in and they know what's going on now is huge. And some people, it's not caught until you have a really big heart attack.
Right.
So, but obviously a very scary situation for Mark D'Antonio and his family.
Joe Rexroad, outstanding writer for the Lansing State Journal, our guest on Ebling and You. We mentioned earlier, Joe, that we have seen what happened with John Bennington when they found him on the Jennison floor, and Dave McLean on the exercise bike, and Randy Walker when they did not have this kind of a warning sign. But, you know, Bo Schembechler coached another 20 years after his heart attack, and Judd went 10 and a half, and, you know, he wanted to go another 10 and a half. So I would guess that with this kind of intervention, the stent in place, as they say, his long-term prognosis is very good.
Yeah, excuse me. You know, from what Mark D'Antonio said in the past, you know, I think it's some of these Penn State weeks, he said, you know, I don't want to go that long anyway. Right. You know, I mean, I think he should be able to continue his career and go as long as he wants, you know, hopefully. Like you said, I think Bo Schembechler was 40, right? And he had a lot of heart problems.
Yeah, and it was brought up earlier, Joe, that, you know, Mark's been through a lot with what happened with the players in the fight last year in Rather Hall, and it hasn't been easy here of late. But, you know, I think that looking at Saturday night, that was as important. I ranked it number 2 on my list of D'Antonio moments, and some people would probably rank it number 1, but throwing out the national championship for Ohio State, setting that aside, the most important defining moment I saw in his career was the Monday after his first Michigan game.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that, where he basically stood up and said, it's okay to be green, and it's not over, it'll never be over, threw down the gauntlet, and, you know, I think Michigan hadn't won since, so...
No, it's funny you mention it, because actually for tomorrow I wrote a little bit about this, and I those are the two moments I picked out as kind of the fan base building moments. You know, I mean, I think he really endeared himself to the fan base with that moment, and now I think, you know, and let's face it, last year was a little bit of a step backwards,
sure.
So it doesn't take much to get heavy fan complaints anymore. You know, I mean, let's be real, but I think that call and that victory was a huge, huge moment for him, and those are the two big ones, no question about it.
Joe, what happens if Charlie Gant drops that ball?
Well, you know, that's another thing. I kind of ask that a lot. You know, I mean, I would hope people would still give him kudos for the call. I mean, if it was there and you know, Bates missed
it. It was the right call. It was the percentage call to make.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a gamble still because, I mean, Conroy hit a 50-yarder. Granted, it was indoors.
Right.
But it's still, it's a gamble, and But I think it was, you know, in retrospect, I mean, it was a smart call. If it worked all week and everything, and it's just such a bold move, and, you know, it's going for the win. I mean, I would hope people would still respect that. But the thing is, if it didn't work and they lost, people would then look back at everything else in the game and complain about that.
Sure. Right? I looked at it as being a 50-50 shot for Conroy, and then if he makes it, now you got a 50-50 shot to win in the second overtime. So you really got one shot right. out of four. You got a 25% chance to win at that point.
Great point.
I think he liked his chances a lot better with the trick play. Certainly with the Notre Dame guys falling down, it looks even better.
Right. And, you know, the fact that Le'Veon Bell is the guy, you know, in the middle of the field that they were, that Bates had thrown to every time in practice, you know, and he had the presence of mind to, first of all, it's a good trick play when you have two guys out there, you know. Yeah. When they did trick play in the Alamo Bowl, it was only Gant. He was running an out pattern. So, you know, it was all around little giants will not be forgotten soon.
And it's amazing how one moment, one play influences everything else that's happening. Before Robinson scored for Michigan against Notre Dame at the end of the game, if Denard doesn't score and Notre Dame is undefeated, ESPN Radio is coming to Michigan State last weekend. Now, when Notre Dame loses that game, everything changes, and they're with Clemson, and it's all different. But because Michigan State pulled it out, now Michigan State-Wisconsin is the big game. It's the 3:30 game on ABC.
Absolutely. There's no question the result made the difference there. It would not be the 3:30 without that victory.
Joe Rexrode, outstanding writer for the Lansing State Journal, our guest. Joe, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, see you tomorrow. Thanks, Jack.
All right. We will be right back with our final segment. Jack and Scott, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS.